You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 21 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. We're going to be talking markets and that Tiger Brands update. We're chatting Ndulu Place, results and residential property. And then we've got Benji Meltzer from Aerobotics on getting $100 million from the Naspers Foundry Foundation. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. COVID-19 hospital admissions cost Discovery R85,000 on average. Fin24, Mr. Price Group eyes capital raise for growth opportunities. Morning markets, another strong US session. S&P 500 up 1.7%, NASDAQ just over 2%. Commodities a little softer overnight, but remaining strong and up on their opens of yesterday morning. Asia mixed with a slight red bias, and our top 40 betting markets look levels about 0.5% opening in the red.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. Alex, morning. Appreciate the time. Let's kick off with that Tiger Brands update of yesterday. They are struggling all over the place. Truthfully, some of it sort of own goals with, you know, acquisitions they're having to write down. But broadly, I thought a fairly horror update. Your take on it?
Yes, unfortunately, Tiger Brands has given another horrendous update and explains why the CEO has also left early. And I think more problems are also going to emerge. I mean, I think post-COVID-19 branded products perhaps is going to be a struggle to sell at a premium price, as customers are going to look for value as well going forward. So despite all the previous acquisitions they've done that has been written off, or most of them have been written off to some extent, I think also operationally going forward is a tough time. So I'm quite concerned about Tiger Brands prospects for the time being.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, Ginger Biscuits, I can buy the, you know, the premium branded ones from Tiger Brands. Truthfully, I can get the non-branded. And whilst I might prefer the Tiger Brands and I might like the association with the brand and I can show off to my friends, it's going to be tough out there for consumers, and they're going to be shopping down. They're going to be looking at those store brands, which are, you know, a couple of rand cheaper, and that couple of rand is going to matter. It has mattered. It's going to matter even more.
Yeah, certainly. And also still got the listeriosis case is full on them.
Yeah.
So there's so many factors at the moment, which makes it very binary as a result, I think, too risky for business, but as a food producer.
Dis-Chem results came out yesterday. HEPS are off almost 20%. This is obviously pre-lockdown numbers. I mean, they came to market with expectations of being the next Clicks. With respect to Dis-Chem, Clicks is our premier listed company. I mean, they are just, you know, they're one of the most efficient operators on our market. Your take on those Dis-Chem numbers and their desire to try and sort of emulate Clicks in terms of operating leverage?
I think the result is a function of still the aggressive rollout they've been doing over the last few years. So you can see the operating expense line still way above that double digits. So as a result, I mean, as the economy is slowing down and over COVID-19, you're seeing some pressure on top line. And as a result of the high cost price, you see margins coming down and the big miss in earnings, really, relative to what people were thinking maybe 12 months ago. So I think it's certainly a tough for them, but I think still have a few levers to pull. They could perhaps try to reduce costs and try to get some margin out. But it's certainly not going to be the market darling that it was maybe 24 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's trading at you know, below what was their listing price, or at, you know, it's just under 20 ZAR. I mean, it's come all the way back from 40 or so. A lot of folks look at it and say, well, it's half price to what it was. Is it opportunity, or is it still risk and frankly a little expensive?
Yeah, I think the valuation when it came to the market was quite punchy. and even since then, I mean, the one stage valuation went incredibly high. I think at the moment, the market momentum, only for momentum, substantially lower than it was, perhaps, like I said, 24 months ago. As a result, these valuations, I still think, are still relatively high based on an expectation for the short to medium term. Perhaps long term, but I think at these levels, I'm still not buying this game.
Yeah, I mean, fair price. I mean, they might be down by half, but that just means that the 40 Rand price was completely crazy, and you know, maybe watch rather than jump. Liberty 2 Degrees came out with a fairly detailed update. I quite liked the detail, although the update was a bit grim. The April and May rental collections were sitting at around 40%, a little better in May. What they're seeing is store openings in terms of, you know, gross lettable area, around 60% for May. Foot traffic around the same 60% for May from where it was, you know, pre-lockdown levels. It's giving us some great colour towards how the property space is working. Alex, it is still, however, the property sector has been absolutely decimated, and we can see why. I mean, you know, the numbers coming out of from Liberty 2 Degrees or the stats show a sector that is frankly, I think, in crisis.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I mean, also if you compare it to some of the other updates you've seen from listed retail companies, the collections has been substantially lower than 32 degrees. There's a couple of reasons for it. One being, of course, we do have a lot of restaurants and so forth. Think about it now from De La Square and the like. I think Darren mentioned about 11% collections in an area like that. So the path to normality is also going to be longer for businesses like this because, I mean, who knows when restaurants will eventually be open and what capacity and the ability to pay. But I think that's a bit of a concern. However, Liberty 2 Degrees, if you look from their balance sheet perspective, their debt is lower than most of the average. So I think I don't see a debt crisis. I'm not too sure what percentage collections they need to receive in order to service the interest. So that's going to be obviously the critical part for any listed company at the moment, is simply servicing interest instead of looking to pay dividends and so forth, and their leveraging, of course. So, yeah, it's difficult to say. I think the liquidity is probably still okay, but yeah, this segment of the market is going to be under a lot of pressure for, I think, for extended period of time.
Yeah, it's that loan to values we need to look at. Last question before we let you go. We've got Monetary Policy Committee meeting yesterday and today, announcement this afternoon. The consensus seems to be a rate cut is definitely on the cards. The question is how big? What sort of, are you looking for 50 points, maybe a full percentage cut later this afternoon?
Yeah, the consensus is looking for 50 basis points. I'm leaning more to 100 basis points. I think if you look at our real yields, and I'm still relatively high compared to the rest of the world, there is scope to reduce. And at the moment, we need any sort of stimulus we can. We always, of course, ramp up straight to the later stage again. But I think you've got to have a meaningful impact rather than 100 basis points at this stage, back to 50.
I'm with you on the 100, and that would make a 3% cut for the year, which is staggering, but we live in crazy times. It's Alex Dace from Bulwark.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting to Indaloo CEO Carl De Wit. They're talking results to 6 months ending March. Carl, appreciate your time. You guys are a different type of property in that you're mostly residential. You've got a bit of retail in your residential units, but the residential market, some 10,000 units that you have available for rent. Different dynamics in the residential space to the traditional property, which would be retail, office, perhaps industrial. A lot more customers, a lot more smaller customers who you're managing. Almost 10,000 units, almost 10,000 customers.
Correct, yes. And that's one of the strong points of our portfolio, and the sort of the diversity in the different tenants. And especially in this time, I think our buildings have been fully utilized. Unlike some of the businesses that have been closed, our buildings have been busy, they've been operating. So, yes, very different, yeah.
And I suppose one of them is, you know, if I'm at Liberty 2 Degrees, I mean, my customers are in many cases closed. Some of them are going to go out of business. I need to stay somewhere. I need to be renting a space somewhere. You're mostly based in Gauteng, Joburg, the greater Joburg area. How much is student accommodation? Are you seeing extra pressure in the student space, or is it broadly across the board?
The student part of our portfolio is relatively small, but it's an important part. We've got a couple of buildings down in Vanderbijl Park, which is let on eight leases to the two local universities there, the Northwest University and Vaal University of Technology. They've been very good partners. They've tried to maintain their payments, even though the buildings are completely not occupied at the moment. I suppose in the next couple of weeks, they'll slowly start to get the tenants back, you know, the students back. So in the meantime, it's been a very good partnership. We're working together to try and limit costs as much as we can for them. But it's a smaller part of our business.
And you're engaging directly with the university rather than the individual students, which I imagine de-risks that process for you to a degree.
Yes, in this case, they're both on net leases, so we don't deal directly with the students mm-hmm. as far as leases and payments are concerned.
You had just over a 34 cent dividend. You elected not to pay it. Going through your balance sheet, looking at your loan to value at just under 35%, your balance sheet seems perfectly in a good position. I mean, notwithstanding, obviously, lockdown is hurting. You talk about rental collections dropping April and May. Just a prudent approach, rather hang on to that cash, take a view at your year end, which will be September.
Yes, correct. We're not at the moment under any cash flow problems or anything like that. You know, the relationship with the banks and interest payments are fully up to date. There's no issue. It's simply a conservative approach because of all the uncertainty in the current environment and for the next couple of months. As soon as we sort of more certain that the company is in a safe cash flow position, we will. We can reconsider that payment of the interim dividend. But towards the end of the year, as you say, in September, we will then make a decision on paying both the final dividend plus the interim, mm-hmm. interim dividend.
I mentioned your loan-to-value just under 35%, which by industry standards is at the low end of that level. You had some debt expiring later this year, but you've engaged bankers already. You've pushed that out into 2021 and giving you breathing space there. I imagine they're not fun conversations with bankers, but I imagine the bankers are they're engaging. They're happy to work with businesses such as yourself to help make ends meet.
No, that's correct. I mean, we've been engaging with them from beginning of, actually from the end of 2019, because you know, it's not a slow process to mm-hmm. renew these facilities. And we were about to actually go to the credit committees and all that when this lockdown started. So we thought it would probably be better just to postpone or to roll it for the 6 months, just to, for everyone, us and for them, just to get a little bit more certainty before we make such a big decision. But the relationship and the assistance and the attitude from the banks have so far has been good. I mean, there's no issues on that side.
Yeah, and I think certainty is that word. We live in a current time when there is no certainty. Last question. I mentioned up front you've got some retail. It's relatively small in your portfolio. Is that retail literally just sort of residential buildings which might have a level of retail at ground floor?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Obviously, we're a residential focused fund, but when you buy a high-rise building in inner city, sometimes on the ground floor there's some retail, and that's exactly what that is about. It's quite a bit. It's just under 19,000 square meters. I suppose in the bigger reads it's small, but it's an important part of our little portfolio. That's exactly what it is. We focused on the rentals, residential side.
Yeah, that's in place. CEO Carl De Wit. I like the idea about residential property. Very different to our traditional property, listed property that we get on the JSE. Tough times for, but interesting space.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So this came across the interwebs yesterday, 100 million from NASPAS Foundry to Aerobotics. I'd never heard of Aerobotics. Of course, I knew about NASPAS Foundry. That's part of their sort of South African business where they give money to startups. You've got Benji Meltzer. He's a co-founder and the CTO. Benji, morning. Thanks for chatting. Let's quickly talk around that tech, the money raise. You've been in operations now since 2014. You raised a couple of million in VC last year. This deal, about 6 million. We're talking US dollars here. How did you meet Foundry? Did you approach them? Did they approach you? Is this a long, complex process or a fairly simple, sweet deal?
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, it's been a long process. We obviously know NASPAS Foundry well. I mean, it's a very small ecosystem in the BT and tech space in South Africa. And ever since they launched the fund, it's kind of been on our radar, I guess, as the perfect potential partner. And yeah, they actually reached out to us over a year ago now, and we've been in conversation since. And obviously recently with what's going on in the sort of economic environment, there's been some sort of barriers that have come up in the way, but it's been a really long process, but a really good process, and have managed to develop a really good relationship along the way.
You guys operate in the agricultural space, in essence, and if I get this right, you've got drones, you use satellites, you're taking imagery of farms, of their growing area, focusing on trees and orchards, and then you sort of crunch it together with some AI, and you come back to the farmer, and you can tell them, you know, how many trees they got, health of the trees, expected yields, you know, a disease and the like. These are operations that the farmer would have done the old-fashioned way, put on a pair of boots, get a clipboard and a pencil and head out into the fields. You're doing it from the air, you're using computers. I imagine you're making their life a heck lot easier and coming back with much better data for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the premise that the business is kind of built off of, is that farming is, one, an extremely risky business. I mean, you're farming massive areas, there's potential of anything going wrong at a point in time, and surveying that area, monitoring it in the way that you've described on foot with clipboard and paper just isn't scalable, and it's not kind of objective enough to make data-driven decisions. And like I said, the whole premise was using aerial imagery, specifically from drones and satellites. We really believed that we could collect this data at scale, and using computer vision and all the fancy new kind of image processing technology, really computing it down to a form that the farmer can use to make those decisions in a more scalable way. I mean, we're not by any means trying to take the farmer out of the field. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very much still the domain expert and really understand the crop. It's just about giving them the tools to help scale more efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you comment there that farming is high-risk. Farming is hard, I think probably one of the hardest jobs out there. But it is using a lot of tech. I mean, we see, you know, the John Deere tractors, which are becoming more and more automated. And this is just bringing the tech and agriculture, which in a sense is weird. Well, not weird. You know, agriculture is one of the oldest jobs we've had on planet Earth. But tech can really bring a lot of solutions, a lot of time-saving, a lot of cost-saving to those farmers and help them just frankly become more productive as farmers and ultimately better yields, better profits for them, cheaper food for us on the table.
Exactly. I think you're spot on. And look, with the kind of changing times, with the challenges in the economic climate, the regulatory side of things, it really does come down to farmers having to use technology to be able to optimize as margins are becoming tighter and things like climate change are just making farming a whole lot more difficult. And I mean, we've been really fortunate to be positioned, I guess, in the industry that we're on, also geographically. I mean, South Africa's got some of the most tech-savvy, best farmers out of there. And mm-hmm. People have really been willing to kind of experiment and go along the journey with us in understanding the long-term potential of this type of technology.
You are South African tech. I don't know. Yeah, I think you're still based. I'm looking at the number we dialed you on. It is a South African number. But you operate in South Africa. I see Cooks Brothers. They're a KZN operation. But are you predominantly operating in the United States?
Yeah. So over sort of the last 2 or so years and growing now, the United States has been a major focus area for us. Mm-hmm. We're very much a South African company. We, as you mentioned, I'm based there. We build all of the products here. We run operations out of our office in Cape Town. And we service local growers. I mean, it's been key to kind of our development and path up until now. But the business model is to kind of build locally, sell locally, and just given the seasonality of the industry that we're in, the U.S. made a lot of sense as a kind of alternative market, and obviously also the scale of the market. And over the last couple of years, we've really started pushing and growing commercially in the U.S. and a couple other markets around the world too. But yeah, as I mentioned, kind of the bulk of the operation is built out of here, and now along with this funding, really trying to are growing a bit more aggressively on that side.
We saw that with other companies, Mix Telematics. They were based in Stellenbosch. They used the IP in Stellenbosch and then went and basically the argument was, you know, spend in ZAR, earn in dollars is a great process to be. But also, I get your point around the seasonality. You want to be able to sort of move around the world as the crops are happening. It's Benji Motso. He's co-founder and CTO of Aerobotics. They just got 100 million ZAR from Naspers Foundry. That's it for today. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 on moneyweb.co.za, as well as the app, as well as Spotify and all the other different podcast catchers out there. Podcast available from 7 a.m. My thanks to my guests. My thanks to Kodora and Eddie for helping with the show. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.